Fertilizer Association of New Zealand. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
We have read both the original submission, thank you, and the evidence. So you are welcome. You don't need to reread that to us.
Good.
I wouldn't be here if you want to. But you're welcome to highlight key points, and if you have any further written information for us, obviously we should table that as well.
Okay. We don't have any further written evidence. I think our key points are again around the complexity of the plan and the physiographic zones, but in particular how that will relate in future to any rules or policies and the freshwater management units as well, and the layering of rules, but also around, I guess, having what I would call process policies in the plan, policy 39 and 40. So we have some concerns over those, particularly clause 6 in policy 40, which I think you addressed earlier. But otherwise, that's probably our main points other than what was written in my evidence. Happy to take questions.
Mr. Smith, is there anything you want to add?
No, nothing further from me.
So you're happy if we go straight to questions?
Yep.
Thank you.
Very efficient. Boy.
Yeah, just a bit too efficient. Can I, just picking on the point that you raised about 39 and 40 around process, do you have any views on how that could be better done?
Well, policy 39, in my opinion, doesn't even need to be there. There's guidance in the RMA, there's case law, and the need to allow flexibility. I mean, the policy at the moment effectively says that the permitted baseline won't be applied. And there may be reasons for that, but there may be also opportunities where you do want to apply it. So I think there's enough guidance outside of the plan for there not to be a need. There doesn't need to be a policy on it in the plan. Policy 40, I don't mind so much. Again, if it was there or wasn't there, I don't mind, but I definitely don't want to see clause 6, especially given the recent amendments to the RMA, which have tightened up what you can and cannot consider.
Thank you. I thought I had marked a question here, but I can't find it. So, no, Mr. Chairman, I'll...
We can come back to you if you
want
to.
Yeah,
Alan.
Eric? Pretty good, too, thanks.
Edward?
I'll just expand on the amendment to the RMA.
It's amendments to section 108AA, which clarifies what you can consider when considering the effects of activity, and that you can only apply conditions based on the effects of that activity which you are considering, not previous history or another consent.
Thanks. Yes, thank you. Three, your submission on objective 6, I guess adding the words to being at the point of being over allocated, and I wanted to know what you mean by over allocated. And also, to what extent should water quality be restored to if it's degraded?
Well, to what point it be restored to will depend on the policies or objectives that you have in your freshwater management unit. And this comes out of the wording in the MPS, because it talks about water qualities that's been degraded to the point of being over allocated. Mm-hmm. And if the wording's left as it is in the plan, it could potentially be quite onerous, because it's what it's talking about, it's any water that's been degraded. And my concern was, well, does degraded mean that it's gone down within the allocation bands, or does it mean it's gone down below an allocation band? If we just bring it back to the wording of the MPS, and then I think it more accurately reflects those intended outcomes.
So do you have an opinion as to what it means precisely, or are you still saying we should rely on what the MPS says?
Well, I think to some extent we have to rely on what the MPS says, but I think if to the point of being over-allocated, I think if in your freshwater management unit you have an objective that says this is what water quality is in this particular river or stream, then that, if it goes be over that, then it will be over-allocated.
Right.
But often it's between attribute bands,
and
you can have movement in the attribute band depending on differing opinions on that.
Yeah.
But yes.
All right, so that's yet to be decided, isn't it, in terms of the freshwater management units?
Yeah, because that has to go through a different process.
Okay. Now, you also suggest that farms between 20 and 100 hectares don't have to have a nutrient budget, if that's correct. Can you explain your justification for that, especially if we're thinking about nutrient limits and loads in the future?
Sorry, can you say?
It's a mission on Rule 20E.
Is that, are you referring to the submission or the evidence? Just to help the
submission. Submission.
Do you have a clause number or a page number or something?
Rule 20E. Sorry, I'll find it.
Well, while we're doing it, Greg, perhaps I could ask you about cadmium. Is that right?
Yes, certainly. If you want to talk about cadmium.
In your cross submissions, you criticised the interval one. Do you have recent or good data on the concentrations of cadmium in Southland soils?
As part of the cadmium management group, they did the fertiliser industry did sampling throughout the country by region, by different land use, to get a representative idea. And some of those documents have all been presented, which show that the Southland cadmium levels are all relatively low. I've forgotten from memory, though, in the area of 0.3, 0.4, relatively low figures compared to areas which have traditionally had a higher accumulation of cadmium as a result of the historic phosphate applications, which are in Taranaki and Waikato. Now, those regions are relatively high because they've had a long history of dairy farming, so they've got a long history of phosphate applications, and they're principally a legacy of the phosphate source that was used pre-1990s, which was the Nauru rock phosphate, which is very high cadmium compared to most other phosphate rocks around the world. So, and those particular soil types, being aliphatic soils, have a high phosphorus requirement. Yeah. So the combination of those factors have meant that you've seen a relative accumulation of cadmium in those soils to a much greater extent than you've seen in other parts of New Zealand.
So the
levels that you're dealing with in that area, I've forgotten now, Waikato, I think the average is about 0.8, which is just above the zero tier in the tiered fertiliser management system. That tiered fertiliser management system has been designed to make sure that we manage and control the accumulation of cadmium over the next 100 years or so. So for Southland, the levels are really at the bottom end in terms of that management program.
And there's been no trend upwards in the last little while that you're aware of?
The research that we've got at the moment is coming from several areas. The accumulation of cadmium is very, very slow. So you've got regional councils which are doing their state environment monitoring, and they've been reporting some of the cadmium levels that they've looked at on specific sites where they've gone back and done repeat sampling. Because of the nature of being very, very slow, the accumulation, if it's occurring, is probably within the error that you've got in terms of the laboratory error and the sampling error, because regional councils have shown in their reports that they've got just as many with a decrease in cadmium levels as they have in a mild increase. And so they're assuming that over the last 10 years or so, there's been negligible increase in cadmium in Taranaki, Waikato regions, which are the areas we're more concerned about. The other area of data we've got is the Winchmore long-term fertiliser trial, which runs just outside Ashburton. Those soils have had fertiliser applied for the last 65 years on a consistent basis under consistent treatment of phosphate fertilisers. I hesitate to say what the conclusions are at the moment because we've got two conflicting positions from different researchers. One published a paper in 2012 and said that the cadmium levels have plateaued out on that trial, and we've been reporting that they've been plateaued out over that period of time. There's been a question raised by another researcher that says that perhaps they might still be accumulating there at a low rate. So we just need to do a little bit more work on that. If it's accumulating, and I assume if you're applying phosphate fertiliser and the same phosphate fertilisers here in Southland at the same rates, if it's accumulating, it will be accumulating at a very low rate. And the cadmium management strategy is undertaking a review which will take place at the end of this year, looking at the information, the research that we've done, and we'll look at the cadmium management strategy that we have in place at the moment to see whether it's apt, appropriate, what next steps there should be made. It's a very long-term program, and so the questions and the challenges I put forward based on the submission of Ernst Law 1 was that I felt it would be premature for Southland to start implementing regulations and controls on reporting and limiting cadmium when we're trying to look for a national program based on the recommendations of the cadmium management strategy. It's not going to be an issue in our mind for many, many years, if ever, in Southland. And certainly there's time to wait until the next plan change and you've got information from the cadmium management group and the national program that we're developing before you really need to be concerned about accumulation in Southland.
Okay. Thank you. Did you find that? Sorry, about the 20 to 100 hectare blocks and not meeting a nutrient budget.
This was the original submission.
Yeah, I don't remember talking about that.
Yeah, I don't recall it. Do you have a reference for that submission point? You found it?
Yes. Because it's permitted 20 hectares, is now permitted.
Management plans prepared and implemented in accordance with Appendix N, but excluding Part 4 nutrient budgets, which includes mitigations relevant to the farm type being undertaken in relevant physiographic zone and provided to Environment Southland upon request, or the farming activity or property on which the activity is undertaken is listed.
So just
in Southland.
No,
so I'm not sure.
Two issues. What are
what
you
was
reading?
Part 4. Sorry,
but
that was on the original submission,
yeah,
page 24.
24.
Yep.
24 under Rule 20E.
Yeah.
So it's permitted.
What was it excluding Part 4?
I think it's
not. Morris, what was your question? I can't recall.
Why have we excluded the need to provide the nutrient budget? That's what.
Well, certainly we support nutrient budgets as part of the farm environment plan.
It's on top of page 25.
Mm-hmm.
A, 20EA.
Yeah. So it says excluding a nutrient budget. We should do a farm management plan, but excluding a nutrient budget for those smaller farms. That's
okay.
The way I read it, isn't it? Might be wrong.
Respond to you about that, because we're
sure.
Yeah,
I'm a little confused because we certainly do support
yes,
nutrient
exactly.
budgets on farm environment plans.
So we'd rather you took the time and came
yes,
to
no, we would, yeah.
answer. And when you do that, can you just frame your answer in the context of what the 42A officers have recommended to us in terms of wording changes for
yes.
the nutrient budget part of Appendix N?
Yes.
Where they've recommended to us to exclude nutrient budgets for sheep, beef, and deer farming.
Oh, that might be what we're thinking of, yes.
Yeah, supplementary demise.
Were you dealing with an extensive farm system? That might be what we were thinking of there. If you're dealing with an extensive farm system where you can spend a lot of time, energy, and effort in producing a nutrient budget for an extensive system where there are limited mitigations, and you're perhaps taking up a lot of capability when we're at a point where there's limited capability.
You've undertaken to come back to us in
we'll
writing,
back
so come back to
we
us in writing and just put it in the context of what the 42
yeah,
officers are recommending
that would be
to us.
I think it's
reading.
In the original wording of the law, but I'll confirm that, because I'm just reading the original.
Yeah, I'm going to cut you off right
yep.
now because
that's
you've
fine.
Agreed to come back to us in writing.
Yeah, that's
right.
Fine. Yeah,
yeah. So we'd rather you just get
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. Right,
that's fine. Thank you very much. Sorry about
that. Your comments on cadmium, if I might just refer
sure.
to them, and earlier on we had a submitter earlier in the process, not today, who assured us that New Zealand was still accessing phosphate rock that had high cadmium levels. Would you, I'm not going to say who it was, I just, would you have a comment on that?
Well, what do they mean by high cadmium levels? That's
well, that we are applying cadmium, that is changing the nature of the cadmium stocks in the soil.
I think, yeah, if you consider the response I made earlier, I think that the levels that we're putting on at the moment are almost, if they're not at the point where there's no accumulation, they're getting very close to the point where there's no accumulation in the soil. The Nauru phosphate rock that we imported prior to 1990s was a high cadmium product.
We're aware of that.
And there was a voluntary industry agreed program to make sure that we kept it well below that at what we considered the voluntary limit of 280 milligrams of cadmium per kilogram of phosphorus. So that limit's been in place since the mid-1990s, and we've been accessing rock from a lot of different sources so that we could stay well below that voluntary limit. As time's gone on, those levels have been, on average, about 180, so it's been well below that limit. And more recently, it's been dropping to much, much lower levels. We're very reluctant to say that we can keep it at these much lower levels because the access to phosphate rock is not easy. Cadmium is one characteristic that they need to be considering. There are lots of other characteristics in terms of rock. It's a natural rock that comes out of the ground, so the source varies considerably where it comes from. And there are a number of characteristics they need to look at in terms of the phosphate levels, the hardness, the odour, the amount, what they call beneficiation, how well they can manufacture it with the sulfuric acid to produce a superphosphate. And there are a number of characteristics they need to look at. There are different sources around the world, but reliability of supply is also quite difficult. So at the moment, we have companies who access from different parts of the world, and they blend that product to keep the cadmium levels down as low as they possibly can. And that means that they're getting some from very low, some crop with very, very low cadmium levels, they're getting some with an intermediate level, and then they're blending those. Reliability of supply means that ratio will change and shift, and while we've managed to keep that cadmium level down, it's been trending down, we can't guarantee that it can always be kept at very low levels, depending on the commercial characteristics or commercial activity that's out there in terms of what's actually available. One example would be China provides a low cadmium rock, but they, from time to time, make it freely available, other times they shut it off completely so it's not available. So it's quite a complex area to talk about, and people are quite happy to start making quite bland statements. Just access this low cadmium rock anywhere, they can get rock from any place at all. That's not actually the way it works. It's a matter of juggling the commercial realities of access to supply plus all the other characteristics that they need to manage.
But you would say there's a fair amount of scrutiny goes on to cadmium levels on fertiliser used to make phosphate.
Since the 1990s, the mid-1990s, when they made the commitment never to exceed 280 milligrams of cadmium per kilo of phosphorus, there's been a scrutiny of the cadmium levels on daily manufacturing. And they've been under more pressure since the cadmium management group was built to justify and manage that. And we've got a system in place, the tiered fertilizer management system, to try and manage the accumulation of soil based on the cadmium levels in soil. So there's a whole program of work there, and the cadmium management group includes MFE, regional councils, Federated Farmers, the primary sector groups, and our Fertiliser Association ourselves, plus MPI. So within that group, there's a range of different perspectives who are driving the environmental, and the regional councils are very strong in making sure that we're driving a strong environmental accountability within that management group. And they're funding the research and reviewing that program to see whether it's fulfilling what we need.
Thank you for that.
And Roy, did you find a
question? Yes, just clarification, really. On page 35, I think the original one, you make mention of agricultural effluent and you want to change to animal effluent. And it refers also to agricultural effluent storage. And you suggested it should be animal effluent storage. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were there, because your recommendation is actually relatively narrow. On a farming system, there could be a number of things that need to be stored or looked after, and agriculture would be a wider context. Do you still support your recommendation?
Yes, I do. Because it doesn't include, I guess we're just looking at it from our point of view, and agricultural effluent is quite a broad definition and it excludes a whole load of a whole range of things here, individual animals, fertilizer application, non-point source. And it just seems to us that it's effluents derived from livestock farming. So in my opinion, that related to animals. I mean, it could be broader, I'm not, to me, if it's livestock farming, then it's probably likely to be effluent for animals, therefore let's call it animal effluent.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Sneath, as usual, and there's another forum who found your submission to be comprehensive and helpful, but I do have a number of questions arising from the evidence, which I'm going to run through. My first question is a clause 20 of the evidence. You say there the provisions of the proposed Southland Water and Land Plan must give effect to the relevant objectives and policies of the NPCPM. My question to you, is that correct? Environment Southland has published a progressive implementation plan regarding giving effect to the NPCPM policies over a time frame which from July 2018 through to December 2025. So is it correct to say objectives and policies, or should that just say objectives? And if, in terms of any of my questions, if you want to reflect on them and come back in writing, then you're welcome to.
Okay, I might come back to you on that one as well. Okay. Think about that one.
Mm-hmm. And my next query just related to paragraph 34. You say some of the Environment Canterbury plans have been appealed to the Environment Court. There is no avenue for appeal to the Environment Court for Environment Canterbury. There's an avenue for appeal to the High Court.
High Court only.
Should we change your evidence?
Yes.
To High Court?
High Court on the points of law only, yes.
That's right. And there's been very few actual changes to the provisions that have resulted from those appeals avenues.
It's quite limited.
Yeah. Now, paragraph 45, you talk there about the industry agreed good management practices relating to water quality document arising out of Canterbury. Mm-hmm. You would have heard the discussion that I had with the representative from Balance. Is there anything you wanted to add to that discussion?
I don't, particularly from a planning perspective.
No, I think Mr. Taylor addressed it reasonably well. The only comment that I'd make in addition is that I recall at the time those were developed, it was developed very much with the intention that they would be considered as a suitable document to take forward on a national basis. And I think, as Mr. Taylor said, it's still sitting with MFE in terms of whether or not that will be picked up and adopted. And our principal approach is that we'd like to see a nationally consistent approach to matters wherever we possibly can, rather than find you've got 16 regional councils with 16 completely different approaches and versions to some of these things that we believe should be nationally consistent.
Totally understand that, Mr. Sneath. Can you add anything in terms of where MFE are at with that from your personal knowledge?
I can't tell you.
Are you party to that process?
Not directly at the moment, no.
Paragraph 46 in Objective 18. What do the words environmental outcomes mean in the final line of your recommended changes to us?
That would refer to policies in the plan or objectives in the plan, where you're talking about an objective, particularly if you're referring to freshwater management objectives. That to me is an environmental outcome.
Three lines up, it already talks about objectives of the plan. So environmental outcomes must be something different to that, or not?
It's probably a double up of wording in that case, because the objectives set the environmental outcomes. Mm.
Paragraph 47, and you recommend a definition of good management practice. Mm-hmm. Second line, what do the words desired performance mean?
Oh, now this definition comes out of the...
It's in your evidence, I'm assuming that you support it. So desired outcome, desired performance means what?
Performance is quite the right word there. Probably should say outcomes. Choosing the desired outcomes.
And so if it did say desired outcomes, what would that mean?
Well, desired outcomes as trying to meet the objectives of the plan in terms of water quality or your environmental standards that you may have set.
The next line down, it says, while providing for environmental responsibility, what does that mean?
Well, that
one. You see, because you've recommended the definition to us, and definitions are crucial.
Yep.
So I'm very keen to understand exactly what you're recommending to us.
Environmental responsibility means, I guess, that it's all connected to the outcomes that you're trying to achieve, and that you have to take responsibility for if you're putting something into the ground, and you have to take responsibility for that. By taking responsibility, you then go on to achieve the objectives of the plan. But it is related to the environment. So I guess I've called it environmental responsibility. I can come back to you on this and confirm in greater detail.
Yeah, that would be helpful. Because the definition needs to be readily understandable and interpreted the same way by 10 people in the street that you would stop at random and ask them what it means. So.
Yep, I can.
So you'll come back to us on that?
Yes, I can, yes.
In paragraph 50, you raised the issue of scope within the submissions to make the changes to Rule 20 that have been recommended to us by the officers, and I thought, well, that's a good point, so I had a look through the summary of decisions requested. So Mr. Matthew McCallum Clark, in the reply, can you specifically address scope? And it appears to me that the following submissions would give you scope. So I'm going to read out the numbers and you're going to write them down, but can you confirm this in reply? Submissions 42, 93, 144, 156, 429, 813, and 877, and there may well be others, but if you could cover off the scope issue and apply, that would be helpful. Thank you. Paragraph 55, in 54 and 55, you say in 54 that recent case law says that the effects of non-complying activities must be so minor as to not matter, and you refer to the R.J. Davidson case, which is a High Court case. Which paragraphs of that decision state that?
Well, I would have to get back to you on that because I don't have that directly to hand.
So you'll come back to us on that?
Yes.
Because my reading of that decision is I couldn't find any words that talked about things.
Okay. Like
that. It's been appealed anyway, that decision, but it is still current and relevant case law.
Yep.
Paragraph 60, last sentence, is such non-complying activities in the Alpine, Old Mataro and peat wetland zone appeared highly likely to be declined. My understanding of the provisions is that further dairying in the Alpine zone is actually a prohibited activity under this plan. Is that your understanding as well?
It is, yes, yeah, but there may be other activities that are non-compliant.
Which ones were you thinking of when you said that? Again, you come back to us.
Not yet, yep.
So the non-complying activities in the Alpine zone that you were thinking of when you wrote that, if you could come back to us on that. And last question, paragraph 77. And with the request for us to refer specifically to certified nutrient management advisors, which is in, we've dealt with this issue in the Canterbury documents, but in terms of Southland, how many certified nutrient management advisors are there in Southland?
I have to look that up. I'm not sure. They're listed on the website for the CNMA. So
you could come
I
back to us. I'd just be interested in the numbers, because if we were to give them a privileged position, we'd want to make sure there are enough of them to do the job.
Yeah, and I think there is provision there within the way the Canterbury plan was presented was that with approval of the chief executive, it could be someone who was believed to meet the same standards or equivalent, and I think that's quite an important consideration. The only trap in regard to the numbers written on the website for each of the regions is that some of the regions include CNMA advisors who apply nationally, so it would not be just specific to Southland. So there's one or two that might also be included from a national perspective.
Okay, if you can come back to us.
Capability is an issue that we're concerned about, and I'd reiterate some of the submissions that have been made by some of the earlier people about realistic timeframes to provide for that capability to be built up.
Now, I understand all of that, but if you could come back to us on the numbers in Southland. And that was the end of my questions. Thank you.